Hi, my name is Brenda Purcell. I'm 60 years old. Today's date is March 4th, 2020. I'm over at Milton Hall at New Mexico State University. I'm interviewing Alvin Busby, and my relationship to him is he was an advisee, and now he's a friend of mine.
And my name is Alvin Busby. I'm 69 years old. Today's date is March 4th, 2020, and I'm at Milton Hall in Las Cruces, New Mexico, at NMSU, and I'm interviewing my very good friend, Brenda Purcell, who is my advisor, and she's still one of my very best friends.
Thank you. Okay, let's get started, Alvin.
Okay.
So, talking to you earlier today, I found out something new about you, and I think that's so cool. I didn't know you were born in New Mexico. So tell me something about your early life and your family, and just let me know about that.
I was born in Portales. We moved from there to Alamogordo, then to Tularosa, and then finally to here in Las Cruces, and lived in different places here in Las Cruces and that. And, you know, and
was finally, your dad in the military?
No, my father was never in the military. He was never associated in any way with the with the military or anything like that. I had a couple of uncles who served, one in the Coast Guard and one in the regular Navy and that. But they never influenced me as far as what branch of service I wanted to go into or anything like that.
So were you drafted or did you enlist?
I volunteered into the Navy.
And what year was that?
1968.
I was 8 years old. So,
wow.
Yeah, so, okay, so what made you decide to do it?
There was three reasons. The first reason was because at that time, the counselors at the various schools that I had gone to had told me that I had no hopes, no way that I could obtain a higher education and that.
Boy, they just and don't know
you. And so I decided I'm going to go into the military because the military has benefits that one can utilize to go back to school with.
That's right.
And so that's why I went into the military. The second was to get away from my overbearing mother, who, she ruled the roost and everything like that. And if you didn't abide by her rules and all that, it was, you know. And the third was, you know, I wanted to meet different people, different cultures,
and
everything like that.
Well, and coming from all these small towns, it gave you a way to see the world. You know how the commercials always say, you see the world?
Yes.
Well, yeah, that was definitely a way to broaden your world.
Yes. And it also helped me with my social skills because at that time, I was totally social inept. I did not have any type of social skills or anything like that. And being in the military, it helped me with my social skills.
Okay, so how long did you stay in the military?
I stayed in there for 4 years.
For 4 years.
And I have to admit, for those 4 years, I made no plans whatsoever to advance in rank until it was too late because I succumbed to peer pressure and partied and drank and everything like that. And then, you know, I suddenly realized at the last minute that, you know, it behooves one to advance oneself in rank and achieve, you know, greater things and everything like that. And then I suddenly realized all this, you know, by the time it was too late.
And a part of that is, you know, developmental. You know, the thing is, like, when you started, you were really young, and about the time you were about to be done, your brain was almost finished, you know?
Yes,
And so you become more responsible, and, you know, that has a lot to do with it. You were maturing, and like you said, you ran out of time. So why didn't you re-up?
because I got a letter from my mother who said that my father was deathly ill and needed me at home and everything like that. And then after I got home, I found out that there was nothing absolutely wrong with my father, mm-hmm. that it was totally BS. And, oh, I was, for years, I was totally upset with my mother because I really did. I wanted to re-up and everything mm-hmm. like that. And so I went against her wishes. I went down and I joined the local reserve unit. Mm-hmm. And I also got a job with a local civil engineer. And I was, you know, doing pretty good and all that. And I was enjoying life again. Mm-hmm. And then a few years later, the civil engineer came up to me and said, you know, in order for you to stay here with me, one of the requirements that I need from you is for you to go back to college mm-hmm. and get a degree.
And did it scare you, or were you excited about it? Did you have any hesitation?
I was apprehensive at that time. And at that time, because I was working with him, I thought that was the degree that I wanted. Mm-hmm. And back then, they didn't have the programs that they have now. They didn't have the people to say, you know, maybe that's not what you're really looking for. Maybe you need to look at this. You need to look at, you know, other options.
Mm-hmm. An academic advisor.
Yeah. They didn't have advisors.
Which I know it was a different university than this one. Where was that?
It was right here at NMSU.
Oh, that's right. You started at NMSU and then you went elsewhere. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I came back here and I thought I wanted to be a civil engineer. And so it was nasty. F's, zeros, mm-hmm. withdrawals, and it's, oh, no.
And it was only because it wasn't a good fit for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't my forte. Mm-hmm. And for years, I didn't know what my forte was.
Mm-hmm. And were you able to continue to work with this person, or did you change positions at that
point? I changed positions. I got a different job and everything like that. And then I got married and everything, and other things happened mm-hmm. and all that. And then
life happened.
Yeah. I went back into the military for another 8 years, and I applied myself much better this time, advanced in rank and everything like that.
Because you were finally an adult.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, things were looking great and everything like that. And after those 8 years and everything like that, my wife came up to me and she goes, you know, I am, myself and the mm-hmm. kids, we're sick and tired of every 2 years packing up and moving to somewhere else and everything like that. Can you please just get out mm-hmm. and not re-up anymore mm-hmm. and all that? And I said, well, if that's the way you feel about mm-hmm. it, if that's the way you want to do it and everything like that, okay. Well, I'll abide by your
wishes. So when you got out, how did you fit in regular society outside in the military?
It was kind of rough at first, but, you know,
Going from high structure to a little bit less structure?
It was a little less stressful than it was the first time because, you know, I was able to fit in with, you know, other organizations and all that, and I, you know, followed jobs here and there and everything like that. And then I finally decided, you know, I'm going to go for my associate's degree, which I did. Mm-hmm. And I got that and continued on.
And you were successful in doing that because
yes.
It was maybe in something you were a little more interested in?
Yes, I was interested in that and everything like that. And then other things happened, more life stresses happened.
Never ends.
And we moved back to here and then to Denver and then other things happened.
So you still ended up moving?
Oh, yeah, moving and everything like
that. Even
if
you weren't in the service then.
Yeah. And then we finally moved back here because of circumstances surrounding my mother and everything like that. And I was here to take care of my mother and everything like that.
So tell me how you became a bus driver.
Well, I moved back here in 2001, and I needed the employment and everything like that, and I was going around, and somebody said, you'd be a perfect fit to be a bus driver because you were driving trucks at one time, so you'd be a good fit for a bus driver. So I went down, I applied. I got hired, and at first, I thought I couldn't deal with those kids, but it worked out and everything like that, and then things were going real good and everything like that, and then life took another turn for the worse. My mother passed away, and it was devastating there for a while. I thought I was going to lose it there for a while. And my doctor at that time, she said, I think the best medicine for you would be for you to go back to work. I said, yeah, but it's only been 3-4 days. I don't know if they'd want me to back at work at all. And they said, well, give it a shot. So I went back to work. My supervisor and the person in charge of the routes, they were kind of shocked. And they go, we're going to put you on a different route. We think you can handle this because of what you're going through and everything like that. And it turned out to be one of the best routes that I could have been put on. The kids were fantastic. They were great, and for some reason or another, they could sense what I was going through.
They talked. Kids have a lot of empathy.
Yeah, they took me. They took me through, and they even talked with me about what's going on. We talked back and forth and everything like that, and and when I was doing all this, I put myself as a company man. I never, really listened to the kids and everything like that until after my mother passed away and I was put on this one route. And then all of a sudden, I started listening to the kids and listening to what they had to say and going, wow, they've got just as many problems as I do.
Exactly.
And so I started helping them out. And it was the best medicine that I ever had. And it was wonderful. It was great. And so.
So tell me what led you back to school again and how that related to your job as a bus driver.
Well, in August of 2013, I decided, it's time for me to retire. And so I retired. And a bunch of the kids that used to ride my bus, they lived in my neighborhood. And they came up to me and they go, hey, driver, why don't you go back to school? And we're going to dare you to go back to school and get a degree that you can utilize to help other people like you helped us for so many years. And so I gave it some thought and so I started making plans to come back to school, and then I had to put everything on hold for about a year and a half because I wound up being in the hospital for for a while. And so after my stint with the hospital and all that, I finally came back to school. And everything, you know, I really didn't know what I wanted at that time. I tried psychiatry, I tried psychology, I tried counseling and educational psychology. I thought maybe I wanted social work, you know.
Okay, getting back with social work, I know you, as your academic advisor, that's something you really wanted.
Yes.
And it required, applying for the program, and, you know, it's very competitive.
Oh, yes.
So we went through the process together as your academic advisor and you as my advisee to apply for that.
Yes. Uh-huh.
You applied, then what happened?
You were my advisor, and you helped me to apply for social work and everything like that. I wrote a very compelling letter and everything. As a matter of fact, the story that I utilized was a true story that happened on my school bus and when I didn't get in, I was devastated. I was in tears. I was about ready to say to heck with school.
And you came to see me.
And I came and I told you and everything like that. And you convinced me to do a different degree, which I reluctantly agreed to. And so you put me into the family and child science degree, which, after I got into it, I then received an email from one of the instructors over there who goes, I understand that you are having some difficulties with financial aid. And I don't know who this person is. Who is she? So me being who I am, I emailed her back and I go, I haven't the foggiest idea who you are.
Yeah, that'd be something you'd write.
And who are you and what are you wanting me to do? And she answered me back and she goes, my name is Esther Duvall and I am your faculty advisor. I want you to come over to the College of Agriculture, the third floor, room 336, and make an appointment to see me. We're going to go over your financial aid stuff and see if we can get things straightened out with your financial aid. And so for several semesters, we, between Brenda and myself and advice from Dr. Duvall, we finally got my financial aid situation.
We appealed it.
Appealed and fixed, and I am now into my last semester and to graduation, and I owe everything to the people over at the Family and Child Science, and especially to Brenda. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, those people over there in that department, I knew they would take you in and guide you and just make you feel a part of it. And the change in you, I just was amazed because you suddenly were excited about, I want to try this, I want to try that. And you were coming in all the time saying, oh, I'm going to do this next and this. And now what's the next step, Alan?
Hopefully graduate school. My application is under review for graduate school, and I had a meeting last semester with one of the faculty members over there who, you know, advised me on a couple of courses and all that, and she, after we made some changes and all that, she said, you know, consider yourself one of the fortunate few. And I go, what do you mean? She said, you just might be the very last student to graduate with a minor in child advocacy studies because we may not be offering that minor through the college anymore. So you might be one of the fortunate few to, and one of the last ones to be receiving this minor. So consider yourself extremely lucky.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm really proud of you, and I'm no longer an academic advisor because I have a different position on campus.
Yes.
But you still come and visit me.
Yes.
And we still talk about what you're going to do, and uh-huh. we've become real close friends. And,
yes.
And I am just so proud of you again, and mm-hmm. and your resiliency and grit, you know, just means so much. Every time you've been knocked down, you get back up and,
oh yes,
you know, brush your pants off and just say, okay, if that didn't work, I'll try something else.
Yes. So. That's, you know, and that's something that, you know, I think the younger students, especially the ones that are still in middle school and high school, should, you know, take under consideration. And that is that, you know, if they are told by their advisors in school that if they can't achieve a higher education, and that because of their background, their culture, or whatever like that, you know, they don't have to necessarily enlist into a military organization or anything like that. They can go down and join a reserve unit, or they can join the National Guard unit and all that. And after they've been in there for a while, then they start building up benefits and everything like that. And they can use those benefits to achieve that higher mm-hmm. education. And thanks to those benefits and everything like that, I have been able to get a dream come true at last.
That's right. And you know what? It doesn't always happen to happen when you're 18 years old. College is always there, you know, and it takes as long as it takes.
Yes.
And that's even true for myself. So it just took a little longer for me too, but we both got to the same place.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, thank you for doing this today. And
thank you.
Yeah. So is this there anything else you want to
This has
add?
Been fantastic.
Yeah,
and
I think,
yes.
I've enjoyed it.
Yes.
So, do you want to say anything else before we end?
Well, I'm... I'm just...
You have around 15 minutes left.
Wow. But no, I'm, you know, I'm fairly confident that my application for graduate school is going to go through because when I went to meet with the people who were going to do the letters of recommendation, I went to them with with the letter that I was going to present and my resume. And I told all three of them that when you write this, don't write about me as an individual, but write about what I have achieved so far, how I have gone from bringing my academic, my GPA up from a 0.00 to a 3.5 right now. And it may go down or it may come back up. And the fact that, you know, I've also, you know, made it to the dean's list at least once. I don't know if I'll make it again, but it gives one a nice feeling to make it onto the dean's list. And then they all asked me, well, what is an FCS degree?
And everybody asked that.
Yes. And I tell them, well, an FCS degree is kind of similar to social work. However, a person with an FCS degree does not go out and find programs for the people and everything like that. We help the individuals find what they need to find. We counsel them in regards to their marriage problems. We counsel them on their nutrition, their finances, their behavior problems, and all
where to
that.
Get resources.
And how to find these resources, mm-hmm. and everything. We don't go out and find these resources for them. We help them find the resources on their own,
right.
and all that. We counsel them.
Yes.
We don't, you know, go out like a social worker and find all these resources.
And we
for
don't
them.
Point out what's wrong with their life. We help them.
Yes.
You know, get the resources to be successful and come from a strengths perspective.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's a big difference because you're coming from a positive, you know, and instead of making people feel bad about their life, you say.
We don't make them feel bad about their lives and all that. We encourage them to be, you know, grateful for their lives and everything like that and to be positive about their lives and all that.
Yes.
And the two instructors, when they heard me, you know, give the spiel, they just looked at me and they go, "Wow, you have learned a lot." And I go, "Well, I had some great instructors."
That's right. That's right. And I love that department.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
I think that in this world we need more people in that department and the word needs to get out on what that department is, because people all know about social work, but they've never heard of the family and child science. And and it's such a positive thing. And I'll tell you what, you being in that program, you know, with all of those younger students, and, you know, different ages, but, you know, you were on the other end of the spectrum. But you bring something to the table, and just... You know, you've lived during times that they haven't, and you can bring a different perspective. And so what do you think that you have given to these younger students?
I brought myself to these younger students because last semester I was a college mentor. And as a mentor, I helped even the mentors look at things differently. And I filled in for mentors that wasn't there, and the students were amazed that, you know, they'd ask me questions and everything like that, and, you know, they were amazed of the experience and the life stories that I had that I could share with them and everything, and they go, "How come our instructors don't tell us things like this?" And it's because I don't think half of them have lived through what I have lived through.
Exactly.
Or have seen the things that I have seen.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, one of the things that I did in my second tour of duty was that I didn't become a party animal like I was the first time I was in. I would go and I would meet with the different cultures at the different ports that we were in. And I would meet with the people and because I wanted to understand who they were and what they did and, you know, how, you know, they were and everything. And by doing that, I got to meet some very wonderful people. I got to understand, you know, how their cultures are and everything like that, you know, and it was amazing.
And
because
more so why you're a perfect fit for FCS.
Yes.
Know?
Because, you know, I learned how the Japanese people, you know, do things and why they do certain things and why the Chinese do certain things and everything. And it's, wow, you know, it totally different than us. And even African people, why they do and how they do certain things. And it's totally different than our culture and how we do certain things and all that.
Well, and for you to impart this on this these young people, so many of them, they come in and they are, they're in school and, you know, they want to change the world so fast. And and sometimes, you know, with age and experience, you know that it's not an overnight. You can't just go in and say, oh, well, this is wrong, so let's change it. It's got to be in increments, and you have to also take into consideration the person's culture. Mm-hmm. And, again, your degree teaches you how to be respectful to other cultures and how to work with them without insulting them.
Yes.
So, So I just... I'm so proud of you for doing the degree and following through with it, because you are the exact kind of person that they need in that degree.
Yes. Yeah. So. Yes, and I totally agree with you. You cannot change something overnight. It takes many, many years to change something. And sometimes you cannot change a person's view or how they perceive somebody overnight either. That's right. Takes several weeks, months, even a couple of years to have, you know, and all that.
So have you made some close friendships with some of the younger students in your courses?
Oh, yes, I have. Yeah, and it's, they really, you know, like me and everything like that. And it's, there's no saying that, you know, when you go back to college and all that, and you see the college students now and all that, you look around and it's, wow, they look like high school students.
Give them a couple years and they don't.
Yeah.
So, but I think college has made you younger feeling, you know. Oh. I think that it really just, you know, a lot of people, they get to a certain age and it's like they start to wind down. And in your case, you're just gearing up. And I think that, you know, you just seem so much healthier than when I first met you. And just, you know, I think you just understand all the processes that it takes to be successful in school, because one thing I've noticed about you is you're not afraid to go get the information you need if you're interested in something.
Yes.
And get all the paperwork and then go through it and overthink it. And,
And I'm not like the other students. I'm not afraid to go and tell an instructor or even the department head, you know, I feel this policy is wrong. I think this part of the instruction process, it isn't correct. Maybe it should be this way and all that. Whereas the other students, they just go with the flow and all that and think, oh, this is the way it's done. It's,
well, they're also trying to, you know, develop their identity, and you've already, you're past that, so you have the confidence. You don't worry about what other people think.
Right.
You know, and I know that's definitely you. You don't care. You have a goal, and you talk to who you need to talk to make it happen.
Yes. And, you know, and as I say, I've been there, done that, you know, and I'm still learning how to do other things.
No, that's the rest of your life, you know. The thing is, it never changes.
Yes.
So I think I learn something new every day, and I'm sure you do.
Yes, I do.
You know, so it gives you something to look forward to all the time.
Yes. And even this has been a wonderful experience, something that I'll never forget.
Well, it's forever now.
Yes, so. It is.
So, and I really do thank you for letting me be a part of this.
You're welcome. Okay. And thank you for being part of it, too.
Oh, sweet.